Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to revisit Dart, the programming language. It's gotten legs. It's getting bigger. We got the lead of the project here. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 362, recorded November 10th, 2015. Dart Update. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by PagerDuty. PagerDuty decreases alerting noise for IT operations and developers to ensure that the right engineers are notified at the right time. Increase your uptime and sign up for a 14-day free trial at PagerDuty.com/twit. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you want to probably download right after this show and play with, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it. Joining me today is my wonderful co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Randall.
You don't sound very chipper. Is this just too early for you?
It is too early, but you know what? Look, I've got my coffee.
Okay.
So in about 5 minutes, I will be awake and alive and just full of energy.
Wonderful. So I'll just be chipper and because I've been up since five, so it's kind of the schedule.
Oh my word.
Yeah, it's a schedule I have to do in order to get in here early enough to be able to set up and everything and get over to work and like that. And I'm a slow starter in the morning, wow. So. Yes, I've had my share of that. And where are we speaking to you from? Well, no, that's backwards. I haven't done it backwards in a long time. Where are you speaking to us from?
From my man cave, my study. I've got all my wonderful toys and things around here, and this is where I do my work. And so this is a very comfortable place for me to be.
Okay, very cool, very cool. And I'm, of course, if you're watching the video, you can tell I'm in the same wonderful room that occasionally has the sun shining over my shoulder. There's no clouds today. I'm in Santa Monica at ZipRecruiter. They've loaned me the space to tape the show every week when I'm in town. So that's pretty cool. Well, we have a really special show today. The Dart programming language has been around for, I think like 4 or 5 years now. But we had Seth Ladd on about 2 years ago. Google created Dart to be able to develop both client-side and server-side applications. It's a modern language, and the neat thing about it is it transpiles down to JavaScript, which means it'll run in all modern browsers, or with certain limitations to that. And we had Seth on a couple of years ago, and I hadn't heard much about Dart when I did that show, but I got really excited about it. I know you got excited too. You started downloading the SDK right during the show.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fun show to do. So I haven't had a chance to play with it too much, but it seems like it's picked up a lot of speed, at least in the programming community. It seems like a lot of people have really picked it up and taken to it. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of new updates they've been able to come up with since then.
Yeah, and also I think when we talked to Seth, it was like an early beta or something like that, the M1 release or something. And now it's hit like 1.13, I think, is at least RC candidates already. So that's pretty cool. Well, you know, we could sit here all day talking about Dart, but I think we should really who's on? I'm sorry. I'm a little not quite awake, perhaps. Casper Lund is joining us, and he's one of the leads of the project. And he was also instrumental in the V8 virtual machine. So he works for Google, and so he'll be talking to us about the history and the future of Dart. But first, I have a very important message I want to bring up. PagerDuty is an operations performance platform that delivers visibility and actionable intelligence to help increase the uptime of your apps, servers, websites, and databases. If you rely on your software and services to always be up, PagerDuty is an essential tool. As the hub of your operations, PagerDuty connects all of your systems into a single view where you can see critical events across all of your monitoring tools. Dispatch alerts by automated phone calls, SMS, email, and push notifications, and resolve incidents on the go so you can live your life even when you're on call. PagerDuty analytics tool will also identify common problems, allowing you to proactively make system improvements and prevent future outages. And you can customize it to fit how you and your team work, regardless of location or size. PagerDuty is trusted by thousands of companies, including Microsoft, GitHub, Boeing, Nike, Pinterest, and Box, and also my two clients, Insight Cruises and ZipRecruiter. So get the right engineer on the right problem at the right time. Visit pagerduty.com/twit to sign up for a free 14-day trial. And for as little as $19 a month, you can increase your uptime with PagerDuty. That's pagerduty.com/twit. And we thank PagerDuty for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Casper Lund. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Randall.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm stuck in a basement in cold, dark Denmark.
All places. Denmark. Wow. Yeah. So it's like, what, about 8 p.m.? No, 6 p.m. somewhere in there?
Oh, 5 p.m. in the afternoon. But it's really dark here already. I guess that's how it is living in Scandinavia in the cold wintertime.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, so I gave my overview of DART. I'm actually quite familiar with DART since I actually have commissioned work that I'm doing in it. So, and I've given lots of talks on it already. But let's hear your story. How did DART come about? Because I think that's something we really haven't covered yet.
It's actually kind of an interesting story, right? So for a while, I joined Google to help build the V8 JavaScript engine for Chrome to try to make client-side web-based applications run a lot faster. And there are a lot of things we could do there. I think we did a reasonable job in making JavaScript faster in the browser, but there are still some issues we could see with internal teams using JavaScript at Google. So in many ways, we saw big teams producing high-quality apps, but they were not super efficient at doing so. So even fairly simple apps, like you could say Gmail, at least on the outlooks of things, is a fairly simple app. It took a fairly big engineering team to build that. And it was costly to maintain it across a lot of browsers, and it was a somewhat painful process. So coming from a language perspective and a language background, it felt like that was an opportunity to try to produce something, a software stack based on a new programming language, was just an inherently more productive environment to be in. So that was the starting point of it. Basically, being a little bit uneasy about whether or not big companies could produce like really big web apps in a language like JavaScript and be efficient at it. And we felt like, having looked at the options, that doing a new language was the best way out.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've discovered, I don't consider myself an expert in JavaScript, but I'm always sort of annoyed by all of its subtle problems and the fact that you have to layer something on top of it to get classes, traditional classes. And for me, it doesn't feel like it scales. And I'm amazed Google has done as much with it as they have, or any large corporation anyway. So what was the trigger there to then say, let's build a new language? And how did that process come about?
Well, I mean, most of the founding team here was very much in the virtual machine space. Basically, we gotten up in the morning to optimize languages, and we also felt like there was a good opportunity to create something that was just a faster runtime system for modern language. We came at it from a performance perspective initially, but over time it turned out that the productivity angle, the fact that people do not have to struggle too much with subtle issues in the core of that language, is a real big help, especially when your team size grows. So we found that a focus on productivity and making people efficient at building big things was really, really valuable and good. So that was basically the first of small turning point in the DART life cycle, you could say, where we found that it really appealed to big teams also at Google to get a more productive software stack.
And what languages influence you the most in creating DART?
There's a lot of influence from, you would say, the most familiar languages to the masses, perhaps, like Java and C# are big influences. But they're also, at the core of it, there is a very simple object model that is very close to what you have in systems like Smalltalk, where everything is conceptually an object, and you call messages on these objects. You call methods on these objects, and some people call that message sending in a Smalltalk terminology. So at the core of it, the object model is very simple and sometimes a lot simpler than the Java and C# models. So dynamically typed is certainly something we got from Smalltalk or even JavaScript, and the higher level structures we got from, say, Java and C#. I think those are the primary influences. There are a few more exotic things sort of along the edges, like multi-isolate support that we inherited from Erlang, and a few other things that we, of course, sort of picked up over the years in other setups.
Yeah, I was programming in Smalltalk in 1981. I was actually working for Gemstone back then. And the one thing I want to say before I forget is thank you for getting cascades right.
Yeah, cascades is an interesting thing, right? It's a thing you had in Smalltalk, a way of calling multiple methods on the same receiving object. And it's really, really a joy to use. And it's kind of nice to see that in a modern language that people can sort of still get a feel that it's sort of a familiar language to people that do not have a Smalltalk background. So I think we sort of reintroduced that concept, and it's actually a kind of nice feature. Small thing, but it's nice to have.
Well, not only that, but you now keep me from having to say self at the end of a chain. It's automatically returning the original object, not the result of the last method call.
That is a nice detail too, definitely.
Yeah, that's getting it right. I mean, I know they couldn't go back and change it once it had been implemented in Smalltalk 80, but that was so annoying. I always use a cascade, and we're getting to trivial details. One of the things I want to say is Dart is influenced by a lot of things, but what does it bring uniquely to the picture?
Well, it's kind of hard to do like a language comparison that way, but there are a few, you could say, properties of the language that are sort of, I wouldn't say super novel, but a combination of things that work out pretty well. Maybe the biggest selling point initially in terms of sort of language features was this notion of an optional static type system that was truly optional. Essentially, the idea was that types are really good for describing intent. So if you, as a programmer, sit down and write some code, sometimes you want to document in the code what your expectations are of certain things. And often that comes down to being able to write types for your fields and your parameters and your like the return value for methods. But making that truly optional, allowing people to put it in where it makes sense to them, not to some tool chain, I think that was a novel thing to see in a language for the masses. We are not the first to try it out, but I think we were the first to try to do it in a language designed for lots of people.
So just so I can make this clear for our audience at home, so you can add types to things, and that gives you more indications for the IDE and for the tool support tools, but you can leave them out if you just want to write something quick and dirty. Is that a good way to summarize?
I think that's exactly right. Often we see it as a more of a gradual typing thing, that people start out by not having a lot of types to just try to prototype things, experiment, get a feel for things. And then once they're happier with the design, they start sprinkling types around the system. And having a system that allows you to go from zero types to types everywhere, if that's what you want to, is very powerful. Often we see people, if they build in a team, they start on their own without too many types, and then they upgrade that to having more types as they are getting ready to show the rest of the team what they're working on, just to sort of document what it is. That works pretty well.
And was Dart was initially targeted for both server side and client side? Was that always been the case, or you tell me.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, right? I think when you design a language, it's really good to have a sort of focus, and we definitely went for the web angle first, and we looked at how we could improve web apps. We felt like this was an area that needed the most improvement, so we started there. At the same time, we also have a strong tradition in designing sort of general purpose languages and working with them. So it's kind of hard to design a language for like a very specific niche. It often ends up being like a fairly general thing. So that's the same with Dart. We designed it sort of primarily for the web, you could say. But in the back of our minds, we always had this notion that it would be great to have a lightweight dynamic language that worked great across the server and the client. Behind the scenes, I think we were always thinking about having it spread across multiple different sort of device types, but the initial focus was very much on the web.
Okay, and so did that influence then, since you were compiling to like older JavaScript, were there features you would have wanted? Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, it did influence a few things, right? So we had a hard constraint, you could say, that we wanted to make sure that we could compile to JavaScript that would run reasonably well in even older browsers, at least some older browsers. And that is a big constraint. There are things you can do in a language if you control everything, like non-local returns and other Smalltalk terminology, where you can return out not out of a one particular method, but maybe as like a surrounding method if you have nested function expressions inside things. That's really hard to implement in JavaScript. So we had no choice but to leave that very cool feature out. And there are a few other things that we also had to leave out that way. So we were sort of constrained a little bit. But that's mostly a healthy thing when you design languages. Otherwise, you just go completely crazy.
And I've noticed that the SDK has changed over time. Can you talk about that and why you did it that way?
Are you thinking about anything in particular with the SDK?
Well, the fact that you no longer ship an editor.
Oh, that's true, yeah. So for a while, we were building our own editor to make it really easy for people to get a feel for what Dart could be. We had this thing called a Dart editor. It was based on Eclipse. So it was essentially almost like a plug-in to Eclipse that you could then download and play with. And that worked pretty well for some customers. But we found that having a fuller IDE story where you had version control system integration and a lot of other things, it was just too much for us to build everything on our own. So we decided to go for a different route where we changed the SDK. So we have, you could say, the building blocks for providing a good IDE experience. And then we let IDE vendors work with us to sort of fill in the blanks and give a good experience. So we have a very good offering in IntelliJ, where they have a great Dart plugin. But it's all based on the technology you provide. So in terms of like syntax coloring and highlighting, code completion and basic navigation of the code and static analysis also, we're providing sort of the basic building blocks so everybody gets the same kind of quality implementation.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of the things that you had sort of bundled in are now available for everybody, so it sort of levels the playing field. And you're even using it in DartPad too, right?
Yeah, DartPad is a way of trying to experience some of the lightweightness we had with the original Dart editor, like very easy to get up and running in an even simpler context on the web. So you can go to dartpad.dartline.org and you can start typing in Dart code and you can even run it in the browser context. But that's a great way of getting a really zero install experience of writing Dart code and working with Dart code. And the kind of analysis we do in this context, it's exactly the same analysis. Static analysis, code navigation, working with a code completion, as you would get in a richer IDE. So this is deliberately not for writing huge applications. It's for like playing around with the system and getting a feel for what it is.
Yeah, that's what amazed me about it the first time. For those who are listening to the audio, not to the video, we actually have DartPad up on the screen right now, and it's running a solar system animation on the right-hand side there, and it's getting a full 60 frames a second. This is Dart doing this?
So actually, in this context, we're compiling Dart to JavaScript, and then we're running the JavaScript this one pane of the window here or the tab.
And so this is live editing.
We are translating.
This is live editing. We can actually go in and change pieces of it. In fact, for a demo I did last week, I changed the sun to be purple. It was just a matter of changing one of the color elements, then it immediately became purple, which was really, really cool. I really encourage people to go check out dartpad.dartlang.org to play around with this stuff. One of the things that's sort of controversial recently was the decision to not aim for having a VM in Chrome and maybe other browsers. Can you describe the background of that and why you decided ultimately to go to a pure JavaScript solution on client side?
So initially, we thought that providing our own runtime in the browser context would really make Dart run a lot faster and a lot better. Over time, it became clear that if we did a really good job in translating to JavaScript, we could reach many more browsers, making Dart compatible with the entire modern web through that. And it felt like the focus that we needed to have to make that a really good solution was sort of a little bit hindered by our efforts to try to put the Dart VM into one particular browser, in this case, Chrome. So just to make sure that the kind of applications you can build in Dart just run great across IE, Safari, Firefox, and Chrome, we felt like taking a step back and focusing on making that experience really good in a translate to JavaScript setting was the most important thing we could do. So that was a slightly different direction than we initially thought we would take. But we found that we could actually do a really good job in translating to JavaScript. That's one thing. And also we could still get the productivity gains that teams using Dart really end up valuing without actually shipping our own runtime.
And I know that some of the net went a little crazy with that, saying, well, Google's abandoning Dart. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, for languages and systems that take maybe many years to implement and get mass adoption of, it's very good to sometimes take a look at the technology you've built and figure out if there is a different way of making good use of it that might in some ways be a sort of a diverging from the original path. And I think you see that in all successful bigger systems that at some point they change direction a bit. So in many ways, this is a health sign for us that we are still actually adapting our strategy and looking at how Dart can make more sense to more people instead of sort of pushing our own agenda all the time.
So it's been a while since we've talked about this. What are people doing now with Dart? What are some examples of some things that you've seen people do with Dart that might resonate with their audience?
So First of all, we're seeing a really great take-up internally in the company. So big teams that are doing applications, web applications inside Google, a number of them are looking at Dart or using Dart for building production systems. There's actually a really good coexistence with the new version of Angular, Angular 2. And there are a lot of people inside the company that are using Angular 2. And this includes some of the AdWords teams that are generating a lot of revenue for Google. And they're also looking at Angular 2, and in particular in the dot version of that. So we're seeing a lot of uptake inside the company on the website of things. Outside, it's a little bit more mixed. We do see some companies that are building pretty amazing things in a web context with Dart. There's a company in the US called Mixbook who are building a really, really slick photo book editing experience in Dart. And a lot of these companies, they also end up being sort of intrigued by the fact that they can run the same language on the server then. So we're seeing sort of a pull for the server technology sort of increase over time. We're seeing more and more people that are building and shipping products that are sort of partly web applications, but also sometimes with a server backend written in Dart. So that's pretty exciting. There's a list on the Dartlang site about that shows some of the companies that are using it. It's kind of interesting just to browse that, especially for me who built the language. So looking through and finding all these interesting companies that are doing some slightly strange things with this is really a lot of fun. The neat thing, though, is because we translate to JavaScript, it's very hard to tell for a user whether or not we're running Dart code. It might have made the developers more productive while they did it, but they don't have to brag about it being written in Dart, or you don't have to run a special browser build to make use of this, right? It's just a web app.
Yeah. You mentioned Angular 2 as well, and just for our audience members who aren't familiar with that, can you describe what that is and why people would be interested in using it?
So Angular is a web application framework, and Angular 2 is the newest, not quite done yet, version of that. Angular is getting a lot of traction as a JavaScript framework for building very smooth and very slick web apps. And it's one of the options that people that are building web apps have in a JavaScript setting. It turns out that there are big teams inside Google that also want to build and get the same kind of benefit from a nice framework, but they just want it in a more structured language like Dart. So the combination of Dart and Angular 2 is a really good match between a really strong language and a platform, plus this great productive framework on top.
Yeah. And I noticed that Angular and Dart both mention mobile on the front page of their web pages. They mention mobile, but I wouldn't picture mobile necessarily right off the bat. Has this been a new push to get into mobile? I mean, everyone's developing mobile first these days, so I assume everyone's trying to get there. But what is it? What is it about Dart, especially, that makes it good for developing mobile apps, or is it this combination of Angular and Dart that makes that happen?
So I think Angular is a really strong sort of web technology, and there are lots of things in there that could probably be applicable for in a mobile setting as well. But we do find that there are a lot of products at Google that are and outside the company as well that are mobile first, or at least if not also like mobile only. So a lot of apps are being built for mobile, and it's pretty clear that high developer productivity is also a valuable sort of asset to have in a mobile app setting. So having a general purpose language in the back, it feels like a pretty natural next step to say, can we start looking at whether or not it makes sense to run Dart in that context too? And will that make developers who want to write for Android and iOS more productive?
Mm-hmm. But these are still web apps. We're not talking about somehow porting code from Dart over to a native Android app, right?
So we're doing a lot of different things as a team. So there are groups that are building sort of experiments based on Dart and sort of a native mobile app stack, and make it possible to write your application essentially in Dart using a sort of React-inspired framework, and then actually run that as a straight-up native app on the device for Android and iOS. It's very much in the technology preview or alpha phase, something that people, including people at Google, are experimenting with and trying to figure out if that would be a way forward to make people more productive and also allow you to run the same app on Android and iOS, modular maybe a few configuration-specific things.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting, actually. It would solve a lot of problems, certainly make it a lot easier. And speaking of making it easier, you mentioned something earlier I wanted to follow up on, which is you say, I think you've said a couple times now that teams of people in companies are working with Dart. Are there any tools or things available for Dart that make it easier to work as a group, as a team of software developers?
It's a very good question. I think we do have some tools that make it a bit easier. So we have a great packed repository, a place called Pop, where you can go and play darts and share your code in a simple way. And that's turned out to be a good asset for us as well. But I think the primary thing that makes people excited about using Dart in team settings is that it has more structure than most of the other dynamic languages out there. So it's still lightweight, but there is enough structure that it's harder to step on each other's toes, and it's easier to make two independently developed components fit together when you're done. And that's partly the language, but also because we have a richer set of core libraries. So people tend to agree on what a hash set is, or a hash map, or even a list of things. So that means that you're not suddenly forced to figure out how do you make these two independently developed components that disagree on core data types fit together. Things tend to fit better together because we come with a richer set of core libraries, a bigger vocabulary, you could say, for expressing algorithms and more advanced data structures on top of. So it's a little bit easier for people to develop these things and move along with it, even if they are starting out independently and then bring it together later. And that's a great, fairly pragmatic benefit of something like Dart.
Yeah, because that's really difficult. I mean, that's something that folks struggle with a lot. Is, hey, I'm working on one set of code and this guy's working on the other set, and it's got to mesh, it's got to combine gracefully, hopefully, and it's difficult to do. So that's really cool. I like the metaphors, the language around Dart, and you mentioned, I think, pub and play darts. Is there a Dart board? I mean, because a lot of times programmers will visually structure things either on a kind of a to-do list or, you know, things that they need to get done. Is there a Dart board that would go along with that as well?
At some point, we actually had a Dart board. It was that was the first version of the Dart pad. It was a place online you can go try out Dart. It was very early on, probably like 3 years ago or something like that. So we are trying to use some of these names, mostly because at least a good chunk of the team find them somewhat funny. I guess there is a way of overdoing it too, but for now we're sort of sticking to it, these Dart inspired names.
Speaking of inspired, what influence did JavaScript promises have on the sort of baked in asynchronous capabilities of Dart?
Well, when we started the building the async support in Dart, JavaScript didn't have any promises. So maybe it's more like the other way around. We added futures as a primitive building block, and that's a very close, like, conceptually at least, to a JavaScript promise. An object that represents a computation that's not necessarily done yet. And that's both a future and a promise. We decided to use the future name, and the JavaScript folks went for promise, and maybe that's a bit unfortunate, but we started a little bit earlier there. The very nice thing is that all our APIs that are async, they're not taking callback parameters. They're actually returning future objects, and that has a really nice side effect that earlier this year when we introduced language support for working with futures and streams in terms of, it's called async and await. Basically, you can have methods that are marked as asynchronous, and that allows you to have an easier way to express that you're sort of waiting for something inside. Some people call it like blocking in a non-halting way. It's kind of scary in many ways, but it's really convenient that you can have code that looks more like straight line code, where you can express that at some point you're actually delaying the computation of the rest of the method until a certain future completes or has the value. So we put futures in really early on. That means that all APIs that are async, they return futures, and that means that this new language feature works across all the old code as well, which is very convenient. In JavaScript, like, they're introducing promises now, but it does change a few things, and often you get like duplicated APIs and a strictly more complicated upgrade path. We were fortunate enough to think about this problem before we sent out too many releases of Dart. So that's been built in from the start.
And when I bring up Dart to some of my friends, they say, well, isn't that just like TypeScript or what the features are coming in ES6? I mean, why would I bother with an entirely different language? Can you answer that?
So I think, I mean, you actually mentioned a very key thing very early in this talk, and that's the lack of confusing, subtle, weird features, you could say. Like there are a bunch of things in languages like JavaScript that sort of shine through in TypeScript as well, where you can get really weird behavior that is surprising. And I mean, if you only have a few hundred lines of code, maybe you can live with the surprises. But if it turns out to be in an important part of a really big application, like hunting that down is really painful. Dart is mostly free of these subtle issues. We've designed it to make the semantics simpler. So it's easier to write and reason about Dart programs and make them correct. So essentially, if you're stuck with having to only extend JavaScript with more functionality, it's hard to get rid of some of the core building blocks that are confusing to a lot of users. And we took the maybe more ambitious road of saying, like, we want to get rid of that, so we have to be incompatible. It does mean that it's much harder for us to get the same kind of sort of quick adoption as TypeScript, because TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. So you can basically just rename your JavaScript files to TypeScript, and off you go, right? So it's harder for us. From a language design perspective, I still feel like that's the right choice, and trying to push a simpler language that is better for programmers is for me, the right thing to do, and for us as a team.
Well, I really like it that in checked mode, a Boolean is exactly either true or false, and anything else is bad. That's the kind of thing you can bring when you don't have to layer over top of JavaScript, right?
I mean, that's exactly it, right? So there are things where you can just be a little bit stricter and say that there are confusing things here, that like the fact that an empty string evaluates to false and a non-empty string evaluates to true in some languages does lead to some really weird cases, right? And those are really annoying to have to hunt down in production apps. So we decided to try to get rid of all those and make it simpler in many ways.
We actually have a question for the chat room. Dallas asks, why do these new languages have to invent new terms for these patterns? What's wrong with the older term callback?
So I think the difference here is a callback is usually reified as a function pointer of some sort, a function expression you pass in, and that gets executed in some context later on. A future is different. It's not really the callback itself. It's an object you can then later say, I want to register the callback on. So it's sort of an extra level of indirection, you could say. So instead of all your methods accepting callback parameters, you just get an object back that you can then say, when this future completes, then do this. That means that instead of passing these down, the parameters, you get a reified object back you can act on. And I think for me, the realization that most realistic uses of callback parameters actually require at least two parameters, one for the success case and one for the error case, made all the APIs that were purely based on callbacks much more cumbersome to deal with, and much harder to thread all these callbacks through deep call stacks. Just returning a future and then letting people either say, I want to act on an error here or act on a success here, is at least a lot simpler for a lot of the cases that we're dealing with. So it's a little bit different, but clearly it's in the same space.
Now, this thing's actually gone beyond Google in terms of governance. Can you describe, I think it's the ECMA committee, describe the relationship between them and Google and what that means to the people who are actually trying to use Dart?
Yeah, I mean, if we take a step back, maybe the most important thing for a language that is out there and getting some use is figuring out how you want to evolve it over time. For us, it was important that Dart was not a static thing that would never change, and that we could, in non-breaking ways, improve it over time by adding new functionality, and we've been doing that. But when you start doing that, you also want to give people insight into what you're doing and also get the opinions of others that have an interest in the language to make sure you're not just optimizing for your own sort of personal use cases. And that's where the idea of actually making Dart an open standard that anyone can implement and get people the same kind of insights into the details of how it's structured as we do. And we do have an ECMA Technical Committee, TC52, it's all names and words here, that works on standardizing Dart, and they look at suggestions that come from us and others to figure out what the next version of Dart will look like. They work very incrementally, so it's small details and small changes that get added over time, but it's sort of outside the control of any one company now, which feels like a very good thing.
Well, I know that Aaron has a couple more questions to ask, but before we do that, I have an important message to bring you. Whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production apps, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I myself am a DigitalOcean customer. I have a little box running FreeBSD in the cloud. Very, very easy to set up and useful for me for rebuilding my packages. DigitalOcean is built for developers, is used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can deploy and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. That's mine, of course. All servers are built on Hex Core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage that's very, very fast. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. Auto backups and snapshots let you easily clone, deploy, and resize Droplets as you grow. You can deploy servers in regions all over the world with gigabit speeds and 99.99% uptime. And you have extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a mail server? They got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. And I have seen that in front of me actually happen. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny an hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS, F-L-O-S-S, in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of FLOSS Weekly. And now over to you, Aaron.
Great, thanks. So I know we've talked a lot about web apps, and we've talked a little bit about mobile apps. But I deal a lot with embedded systems and open hardware and small board computers and things like that. I'm wondering if there's ever an application that you can see where I would choose Dart to run there as opposed to something else that I'm used to using like Python or some other language.
Actually, it's certainly an area that interests us too. Dart is, as a language, a fairly simple and analyzable language. It also means that we can do things to it when we deploy to make it fit in smaller settings. That's very useful for us to deploy web apps, but it's also something that enables us to deploy small apps to small computers. So we're actually looking at building a Dart-based software stack for very small devices, even microcontrollers. Maybe not the very small 8 or 16-bit microcontrollers, but the 32-bit microcontrollers that are sort of getting a lot of traction these days. And it feels very interesting to us to try to see if we can get some of the productivity gains that we've seen on web and to a certain extent on server as well, and sort of move them over and see how they translate to productivity in an embedded context.
Go ahead. Oh, Aaron.
So my phone's ringing. I'm going to let Randall take it if he's there.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I got it. Go ahead. Sorry. So Dart's slowly evolving. Has it had to be not backward compatible at any point?
So ideally, we would always only push backwards compatible changes. Of course, there's a limit on how you can do that. And there are a few APIs that we initially marked as experimental or these might change in the future. And we've changed a few of them. We have done a few things that are potentially slightly breaking for a very few users, but after sending out the 1.0 release, you could say, we take the backwards compatibility pretty seriously. We have lots of people inside and outside the company building Dart stuff, and it's painful if they have to change whenever we update Dart. We are thinking about whether or not a future version of Dart would have more backwards incompatible changes in there, maybe things that would be like warrant us going to a .2.0 version tag, but it's not really set in stone yet what kind of things might be interesting in that space. Very clear that our community is very interested in exploring that with us, so it's something that we are investing some time in.
One of my clients had me commissioned me to do a project in Dart about a year or two ago, I think it was somewhere down there. I know it's still pretty early in the cycle, but I made a run at trying to get this web app created using Polymer, which is still, you know, 0.something. And then that didn't work very well. So I started trying to use the Angular 1.0 or maybe 0.0 stuff. When will Dart and Angular play well together in a way that I can actually use and use it confidently?
You're not the only one who's been suffering a little bit from us lacking a really strong web application framework. For a while, we had a few offerings there, the first version of Angular and also the initial versions of Polymer. And they did change a lot over the time. So it was really hard to build on top of them and get a good experience from that. Right now, we are seeing lots of things like springing up on top of the Angular 2 stack, the Dart version of that. And that appears to be giving developers a really good performance story and a really good output code size. So a lot of things that really work well. So I'm fairly confident that our first sort of long-term supported web framework that will be really useful for you is going to be Angular 2. And we are working on making Polymer easy to use from Dart as well. So that will probably come online as well pretty soon. But I think Angular 2 is going to be a really nice experience, and you will be in the same boat as a lot of big, important projects within Google.
And what's the time frame for that then? Another couple months or half a year or what?
So we're seeing people actually using the technology today, but the team that are building it, it is the Angular team. It's hard to sort of guess on the timeframes on their behalf. So it's clear that it's not quite ready yet to be like a public 1.0 launch of that, or 2.0, you could say. So we're probably looking some months ahead to before we see that in real life.
And the pub seems to have quite a few interesting projects pushed to it. Can you name some of the more interesting ones?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I follow along there and see things that pop up there. And there is code in that code repository from very sort of different domains. There is code for the sort of the initial mobile experiments we're doing with the Flutter team. There is code from some of the embedded work that some people are doing in the IoT space. There's a company called DG Logic who's building a lot of interesting infrastructure on top, and they're pushing a lot of packages to that as well. And of course, there's a lot of web packages. So, I mean, if you look in there, you'll find hours and hours of fun, interesting projects, and at least get a feel for what people are using Dart for.
And what about developer support in terms of unit testing and end-to-end testing?
That's also part of what we offer on PUP. There is a test framework which has undergone a lot of changes recently, and it's a lot easier to write great test coverage, unit test coverage for web apps and other things. So there is it's called test, like a short name. It's a good example of a nice package on PUP that you can use for getting good unit test coverage. It seems that's a really hot thing these days. That makes me very happy.
And is there support in there for testing things that involve futures and streams?
That is such an important thing in the Dart world. So that naturally we had to build the support for testing things that are async by nature. So there is good support for doing these things. Even though that is hard to test or harder to write those tests, there's a lot of support code for that. There's a package called Scheduled Test, which is also trying to make it easier. So we're still sort of exploring the space and trying to make the best possible support for testing things that we can. But it's going pretty well, and the reception of the new test package has been very, very positive from the community.
Awesome. And what's you're aware of large projects using it. Do you have any sense of how many lines of code those large projects are?
The area where we have the most insights is, of course, all the work that's going on inside the company. And we're seeing a really, really strong growth of sort of the line count every single week. So there are a lot of developers that are just hacking on Dart every single day inside the company. I can't mention sort of any specific numbers, but it's enough to make put some pressure on our tools to make sure that we support really big apps with the Dart stack. So we are sort of constantly having to improve the scalability of the tools to make sure that they work for really big things too. So it's looking pretty good.
I know you got some feedback last year when you had to drop support for one of the IE level browsers. I'm not an IE guy, so I don't know which one you dropped. But has that still been the right decision?
So, I mean, it's pretty hard to keep supporting very old browsers. So the new trend in browsers is that they go for this, they call it the evergreen model, where they always basically do rolling updates of the browsers, and they update them way more frequent than they did in the past. So the last version of IE that wasn't sort of on the auto update, in the auto update camp, was the one we had to drop support for. So it's a little bit easier now that Microsoft is also updating IE users on a regular basis. I think with Edge, things are looking way better and much more compatible. So it's a lot easier for us to keep supporting, say, the last two versions of all the browsers, and then just sort of assume that all users will move along with that. And I think all the vendors are now helping us out with that by essentially making it a very good choice to keep upgrading for security reasons and performance reasons. So it's a hard thing to do, especially when you have people using Dart that actually need to support all the browsers, so we don't take those decisions lightly. But at the end of the day, we still have to move the technology forward, and it is really, really costing a lot to support the old browsers. So I feel like it's the right choice.
And I'm going to probably ask a slightly hard question, but because you're obviously going to be the guy, or one of the guys involved in making the decision. But Google seems to occasionally come up with really, really wonderful things and then abandons them later. Is there enough community outside of Google at this point to continue Dart?
That's a very good question. I think in many ways, we have to continue arguing why Dart is a value add to Google as a company, but also to external users. We're seeing a tremendous growth rate inside the company. Really big money-making applications are being built on top of the Dart platform, which is something that should give you guys very good confidence in the fact that we'll continue supporting Dart for the long run. We are building like real apps that make real money for the company on top of the Dart stack, so it becomes a really important part of the sort of the Google internal infrastructure. Outside, it's a little bit harder for people to see everything that's going on. So it's harder for us to point to companies and say what they're doing is important enough to keep the project going. So I think that the best thing to point at is really the tremendous growth inside the company and the applications that we're building on top of the stack that are truly critical for the company.
Is this solid enough then that they could finally get rid of GWT?
I think for GWT is actually a really good technology for certain things, and it continues to be used inside the company. We're seeing people build on top of it. I don't know if you recall that when they launched Inbox some time ago, they shared some notes about how they built it, and GWT is actually part of the story they use there. So I think we'll continue to see that being used for certain projects and being able to play really well with Java code in general can make a lot of sense in some contexts. And that's a place where that technology is just in many ways way better than Dart if you have the desire to interact and interrupt with Java.
Okay. I actually had a question from the chat room much earlier, so I don't remember who asked it, but what's the difference between Dart and Go? I mean, these are both languages that look like they're kind of interesting and Google's behind them and they're building new things with it. How would you contrast that?
They're very different languages. I know a number of people on the Go team very well, and we've sort of compared notes every now and then. But if you look at the philosophy between the languages, they're very different. Dart is more familiar, object-oriented, in many ways more of what you would expect, like from a mainstream language. Go is trying to push the envelope a little bit more in certain areas. But it's also like a very sort of pragmatic language in others. So it's just a very different kind of setup. I think for building big UIs and working with client-side code, object orientation has shown a lot of value over the years. So I think there, Dart is a really good choice. If you're writing servers that need to respond really quickly to things and you're used to sort of working in a sort of a headless environment there, I think Go might actually be a really, really good choice for you too. So it really depends, and they are very different. And I think if you try them out sort of side by side, you will get a feel for a sort of just how different two languages from the same company can be.
So I think I know the answer to this based on what we've talked about before, but I'm going to throw you a softball anyway. What is the best way for people to get started if they're interested in Dart?
So I think the best way to get started is looking at the dartlang.org site and maybe just going to the dartpad.dartlang.org webpage and get a feel for what the language looks like and what it is. There are a bunch of samples there you can play with and just try it out without installing anything. The next step is probably installing the SDK and trying a few things in a web or server context and just like playing with it. But I think the Dartlang site is a pretty good place to start and get a feel for what it is.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. I've been, well, you know, this is more of Randall's specialty here with programming languages. So while you guys were talking, I was playing around, as we normally do on this show, in the browser, in the Dart pad. And I really like it. I will say, I mean, I like that the way that things are highlighted, the explanations you get when you click near a particular statement, you get explanations. You can click through to the documentation if you need to for more explanation. So I really, really like that. And so I really like the way that you guys have laid this out. It's really nice. If people want to contribute code or contribute changes, is that a possibility for people to get involved that way?
Oh, definitely. So Dart is sort of open source all the way through, and we're on GitHub. So I think we made it a little bit easier to contribute than it was in the past. So pull requests or changes that you want to make, just send them our way, and we'll look at it. I think there are areas that are easier to hack on for external people, of course, than others. Venturing into the inner workings of the compiler or the VM might be hard for some, but there are great people out there in the community that actually are helping us a lot by contributing on fixes and high-value bug reports and all that stuff. So go to GitHub and you can find the Dartlang sort of group of projects there, and there's a lot of things to contribute to, definitely, and we can use more help.
Cool. It's been real great talking to you, and we're almost out of time, but is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
That's a good question. I think for me personally, I'm investing a lot of time recently in the embedded space, and I think the notion of having a much more productive software stack for smaller devices, like things that are smaller than a Raspberry Pi and those things, is a very exciting thing. I think with the explosion of devices we're seeing these days in an IoT setting, we don't have enough developers out there that actually have the skill set to target all those devices unless we change the devices themselves and make them easier and more friendly and more hackable. So that's part of what we're trying to do with the Dart for Embedded thing that we're working on. Still very early, but it's very promising.
Very cool, very cool. And I have to ask you two questions or else my audience gets mad at me. What's your favorite scripting language?
Oh, that's an easy one. I think my favorite scripting language is Dart. It is both a sort of a structured language for big things, but you can also easily script in it.
You know, I discovered that just the other day that you can use a pound bang line with the path to the compiler and it works.
Why not?
I know, so I was writing hello world, a pound bang user, whatever, Perl in mind. That's so cool. So it's scripting, it's server side like Node.js, and it's also client side through all the Dart to JS stuff. That's really, really cool to have one language for that. One other question, your favorite text editor?
So I used to be an Emacs kind of guy, and recently I just to get a feel for how other people are using editors, I tried to sort of start switching around. It's somewhat painful. Right now I'm using Sublime. I kind of like it, but every now and then I still feel like the urge to go back to Emacs and just use that for everything is certainly there.
Well, I've been a solid Emacs guy for decades, I guess it is, from about the time it started being around. But I, you guys actually made me buy WebStorm, and I'm trying to figure out how to use it. It's way too complicated for me. That comes from a guy who does Emacs. But I'm finally using an IDE because of all the extra hints and stuff that are there. You know, I can see what methods I can call on an object and stuff. It's so much nicer. And also because editing the HTML, I now have a strong editor that has, when I'm in the HTML part, it indents for that. When I'm in the CSS part, it indents for that. You finally got me into using an IDE. I'm still using Emacs most of the time, but finally I'm using an IDE. So you guys,
that's very cool.
Blame it on you guys. You finally got me out of Emacs after all these years. Well, Casper, it's been really good having you on. I hope more people will be interested in what's going on in the Dart world. I know I'm going to continue to develop courseware and maybe a book is in the works. I don't know. We'll see. I do have a bit of a bent for that. And I'm going to keep proselytizing, Dart wherever I can. The caffeine is wearing off. I can already tell. Thanks, Casper.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. That was Casper Lund from Google talking to us about Dart. What do you think, Aaron?
Well, you know, it was interesting the first time, and it's nice to see that they're making good progress. And that things are not just being thrown over the fence, so over to the wild, so to speak. But yeah, it's really good to see. I think it's really interesting to see the shift towards mobile and supporting some of the other platforms that are out there in terms of Angular and Polymer, and to see that it's not you're not just focused on this one world, but you can go take advantage of some of the newer things that are coming along in terms of web development. I think that's really good to see. And for me personally, I relate more to this than I do to JavaScript. It just seems more familiar to me. You just look at the code, and I can already say, oh, that's what they're doing there. That's what they're doing there. So I think for people that come from a traditional, programming background, maybe Perl or C++ or even Python, I think is a lot more similar, or Java, of course, is more similar to what Dart looks like and feels like. And so it's just easier to do that. I think if I were going to build a JavaScript application, I'd probably start with Dart.
Yeah, it's sort of what I'm assuming too. I mean, I've done quite a few numbers of lines, maybe thousands of lines of JavaScript code, which was made easier by jQuery, but still pretty crazy to do most of the time. And now I'm kind of like looking at doing my next things Dart. That Angular 2 promise was kind of going to get me back interested in doing that sort of thing. So I'm going to do that. And I wasn't kidding. I'm using WebStorm, and I know people are saying, "Well, WebStorm's proprietary. Why are you talking about it in the show?" Well, it turns out you can get a free license if you're a student or you're working on open source software. So you can get WebStorm, which is by far the best IDE for Dart all the way across, provided you apply on their pages and get the license from them. So that's really cool. But there's also six other editors. They just added support to Ant for Dart. So it has the full IDE, just like you're looking at in Dartpad there. And of course, Ant works with a lot of other things. I'm going to get the Ant guys on this show sometime in the next 6 months. That was really interesting to find that out. I could talk about this forever, but we really are running out of time, and I'm up against a hard deadline here. So let me quickly run through the rest of the list of upcoming guests. Just added for next week, it's a Perl thing. People have been asking me for more Perl things. We've got the current maintainer of DivX class, which is an ORM for Perl, maps to SQL code back and forth to the database. Peter Robinson is going to come on and talk about DivX class. We have Caddy, which is a high-performance web server written in Go. Kinoma, which is advanced JavaScript for the Internet of Things. Piwik, which is web analytics. Tuleap, application lifestyle management. And my favorite show of all the ones coming up, well, I can't say that. I have all of them are happy. All of them are good. Is Stephen Ressler, who is a mechanical engineer, is going to bring on bridge designer and the contest. You have to build a little bridge in the computer, and then you run trucks over it, and the cheapest you can build the bridge makes you win the contest. And it's a contest for high school kids to get them more interested in engineering and things like that. So that's really, really awesome. Much more things I could talk about, but I really don't have much time. In fact, you've heard it all before. This will be an important show, so I'll do all the rest of this stuff. So you can go to the homepage for the show at twit.tv/floss. You can see where our upcoming guests are. I am opening up Q1 today, so we're going to start filling out the whole next section. We do have a live stream at 8 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. We took a couple questions from there today. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+ and Floss Weekly on Twitter. Tweets over to that. I have nothing to plug right now except it's my birthday in a couple of weeks. So what do you have to plug, Aaron, briefly?
Oh, well, happy birthday. Happy birthday in advance.
Yes,
because I don't know if I'll see you on your birthday. But no, I am looking forward to the Kinoma episode, by the way. That's a really cool device. I got to play with it down at Make Media headquarters down in San Francisco. And really, really cool. So I signed up for that one. I expect to be on that show. Okay. But you can always follow me on Google+. I post everything there. Just go to Google+/Aaron Newcomb, search for me on Google+. I'm there. And you can also follow what I'm doing over at Benicia Makerspace. It's a makerspace here in my hometown that I run. We've got a lot of cool things going on there as well. So if you're in the Northern California kind of area, anywhere north of San Francisco, and you want to come by and see what we're doing, you can check us out there. That's BeniciaMakerspace.org.
And the chat room just corrected me. I had the wrong A word. The editor I'm thinking of was Adam, not Ant. But you can kind of see how I can get those mixed up.
I was laughing a little bit when you said that. I was like, wait, I don't think he means Ant.
Apparently, they let just anybody do this show. Aaron, thanks for taking over the co-host slot again and providing your insight into this. And you're always welcome on the show.
That's good. I haven't worn out my welcome yet.
All right. And we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.